Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode. So this is episode 74. And in this episode, I want to talk about why building muscle after 40 is one of the kindest things that we can do for our body. And also just try and explain it to you in a way that just really helps you to see why it's so important. But also we'll talk about how you could start to simply implement it into your lifestyle if it's not already something that you're doing, and maybe something that you are overwhelmed by. Maybe you know you should be doing things to build muscle, but you're just not ready, or you know, you're just not sure how to build it into your life. So I'm hoping that by the end of this episode, you don't just walk away feeling more overwhelmed and frustrated about yet another thing you need to add to your list, or you know, that you should be doing to safeguard your health. Instead, for you to think, oh, okay, so it doesn't actually have to be as intense as it's always made out to be. So one of the pillars or modules inside my Midlife Thrive membership and what I work on with clients is this the concept of nourishing movement and muscle building exercise, because obviously there's lots of different ways to work out. There's lots of different ways to move. Movement encompasses walking, you know, all the kind of movement that we might do in our home, housework, anything that's all movement, and all movement is good. And then we have certain different types of exercise, whether it's or workouts, whether it's running, whether it's F45 or other kind of HIIT classes or spin classes or whatever it is, boot camp style things. There's all these different workouts out there. But essentially what I teach is the nourishing side of movement and the muscle building side of exercise that works for our physiology rather than against it. And today I just want to talk about why this matters so much, especially after 40. Because building muscle, it's not just about weight or, you know, keeping our weight under control or how we look, our aesthetics, or trying to hold on to our youth. It's literally about health. Muscle mass is health. It's also about how you feel day to day, how resilient your body is, including your bones, and how resilient your brain is, how smoothly you move through perimenopause and menopause, and how well you're supported in those decades ahead as well. And I know that for some women, the idea of building muscle can feel intimidating or overwhelming or just not very you. I speak to a lot of clients, a lot of people that will say, I've never been a gym person. And if that resonates with you, I'm really glad you're listening, because this episode isn't about telling you that you should be pushing harder, doing more, you must get into a gym and start lifting heavy now. It's really just about understanding why muscle is protective and how we can approach it in a supportive and realistic way. And that will look different from person to person. And if you follow hormone specialist fitness professionals or hormone specialist doctors and other practitioners on social media, then I'm sure you're inundated with that message that women 40 plus should be lifting super heavy 3 to 5 times a week. And whilst there is truth in that, it doesn't have to look that way for you. Lots of women love to be in the gym multiple times a week, lifting heavy for an hour, but that's not the only way to approach it. So first off, let's talk about why muscle matters so much in perimenopause. So the more muscle that you have and continue to build, the better your experience of perimenopause and menopause is likely to be, both now and in the future. And that's not just my opinion. We see this over and over again in the research. Muscle doesn't just help with weight management, with body composition, you know, how lean you look, with strength, with confidence. It also supports your brain health, your cognition, so your memory, brain fog, brain fatigue, all the things associated with our brain as we, and the further we move through to our 40s, we're really starting to see. It supports blood sugar balance. It supports mood and emotional stability. It supports sleep, bone strength, and long-term protection against different chronic diseases. So if you've been experiencing things like brain fog, fatigue, headaches, changes to your mood, hot flushes, night sweats, disturbed sleep, muscle, I mean, it's unlikely to be the only piece of the puzzle, but it could be a very important piece of that puzzle for you. And it's something that's within our control. You'll often hear people talk about metabolism. It's becoming a bit of a loaded word. So what I'm talking about here isn't weight loss metabolism. I'm talking about metabolic health as a whole. And that includes how well you regulate blood sugar, how sensitive your cells are to insulin, also known as insulin sensitivity, and how efficiently your body uses energy. Muscle is central to all of this. One of the biggest drivers of a difficult time in perimenopause, more sort of intense symptoms, is insulin resistance. So that's when your cells in your body and your brain basically stop responding to the action of insulin, which asks your cells to soak in glucose. When those cells stop responding to insulin, it means that glucose stays in the bloodstream instead of being used for energy, which is what it should be used for. And that can start to show up as brain fog, fatigue, that achy fatigue feeling in the body, in your joints and bones. It can show up as headaches. It can show up as stubborn weight gain around the middle, that formation of the apple shape, and as increased inflammation as well. So muscle helps reverse all of these things because it increases insulin sensitivity. So your muscle acts like a glucose sink or a sponge. So basically it means that it pulls sugar into the bloodstream and uses it for energy. And that protects you from insulin resistance and protects you from type 2 diabetes and the metabolic changes that can often show up in midlife, including things like raised LDL cholesterol and triglycerides if you're looking at blood work. And all of these things can lead to an increased risk of heart disease. So a lot of women will come to me in their late 40s and say, you know, my blood work was always good, always had good cholesterol levels, good triglycerides, fasting blood sugar, HbA1c. And they'll say now just suddenly it's creeping up and it's creeping up and it's creeping up. And every time I get tested, it's worse. And insulin resistance is one of the biggest culprits of this. The more we are losing muscle mass and not doing anything to maintain it, the more resistance our cells are becoming to the action of insulin. And that can over time start to increase, like I said, things like LDL cholesterol, triglycerides, fasting glucose, HbA1c. One paper that I looked at said that muscle mass is responsible for over 80% of the glucose uptake just after we've eaten. So it's your largest reservoir for glucose disposal in the body. So after we've eaten our meals, we've broken down all the different components, one of those being some carbohydrate, that glucose needs to go into our cells. It needs to leave the bloodstream, be disposed of into our cells and used for energy. And this is how your muscle enhances insulin sensitivity. It means that those cells are now sensitive or kept sensitive to the action of insulin and allowing glucose to go in and be soaked in. So it's, you know, so much more than just looking fit, looking strong, keeping weight under control. It's health. According to a study in 2020, each 10% increase in skeletal muscle is associated with an 11% reduction in insulin resistance. That is huge. So if people were to, you know, for example, those women that were coming to me with high cholesterol levels and triglycerides sort of creeping up, once they start implementing even just 2 strength training sessions a week of 20 minutes to half an hour, we do obviously work on nutrition stuff as well and lifestyle things because it's all part of the puzzle. They start to see these numbers come down on their blood work. And then they know, right, this is it. This is it for life. This was what I was supposed to be doing. So it's really important that we do understand how important it is. Building muscle is so supportive for energy, brain clarity, reducing brain fog, supporting our memory, reducing belly fat, yes, and steadier moods. It's so much more than how we look. Strength is health protective. For example, if you want to be as independent physically as you can be for as long as you can be, I watched my dad lose his physical independence as he got older and, you know, he's no longer with us, and just watching his last 6 years of his life. And I do not want that to be our story. And I think a lot of us will feel the same. Then we really want to be looking at muscle mass and strength now so that we can have that independence as long as possible. Another huge role of muscle is its relationship with bone health. So when you lift weights or do resistance-based movement, your muscles pull on your bones. And that mechanical load sends a signal to your bones to become stronger and more dense. This is one of the most effective ways we have to protect against, you know, bone loss, osteoporosis, that risk of fractures later in life. The more muscle we have surrounding our bone and joints, the less likely we are to break something, for example, if we fall, because we're not, just because we have muscle and we get stronger with it and we start lifting weights, it doesn't mean that we're immune to tripping up and, you know, spraining our ankle. But the more muscle mass we have and the stronger and denser our bones are, the less likely they are to fracture. Muscle is also increasingly being recognized as the organ of longevity. It's its own organ. It's not just this thing, this thing that makes us, like I said, look lean and strong and healthy. It's actually classed as an organ. Now, quality of life, how well you move, how independent you are, like I said, especially as we get older, how resilient your body is very strongly linked to muscle mass and strength. So when we talk about building muscle, we're really talking about future-proofing your body. Strength training has been shown to increase something called neurogenesis, which is the creation of new brain cells, which is something that we can be doing all the time. We never stop making new brain cells, but we can encourage it, like more of it, by through strength training. BDNF is increased in strength training. It stands for brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It's basically a compound that you can liken it to fertilizer on a lawn. It acts like fertilizer for your neurons, for your brain cells. So these studies are consistently showing links between low muscle mass and cognitive decline, including mood issues and mood changes. Muscle is also protective for heart health, with higher muscle mass being associated with better what's known as cardiometabolic outcomes. So that's your cardiovascular health and your metabolism health, which are very closely linked. And then there's the immune system. When muscles contract, they release molecules called myokines. Myokines are hormone-like messengers, basically, that reduce inflammation and support immune function as well. This is so relevant in perimenopause because chronic low-grade inflammation is something that can become more likely as well as our hormones are changing in perimenopause. And that chronic low-grade inflammation can worsen joint pain. It increases fatigue. It amplifies brain fog. It intensifies all hormone symptoms, you know, essentially any PMS symptom, migraines, headaches, mood issues. So movement that builds muscle is also anti-inflammatory medicine for us because of these release of myokines. So why does this really start to matter more after 40? Essentially, from around age 30, men and women are naturally losing muscle mass each year. It's around 3-8% per decade. Over time, that equates to quite a lot of muscle. And if we're not making sure we're putting that back and maintaining it, it's more of a decline with each passing decade. This process is actually called sarcopenia. And like I said, it happens to men and women, but it somewhat accelerates in perimenopause and menopause because both estrogen and progesterone support muscle and bone. You know, earlier perimenopause, when we still have high, robust levels of estrogen, we're already seeing a decline in progesterone. I mean, that's really happening from 35, basically. The loss of estrogen, the decline in estrogen, I should say, isn't necessarily happening for most women until later perimenopause. So later 40s, the closer they get to reaching menopause itself. So maybe quite late 40s. But that decline in progesterone is already starting. And there is a sort of more subtle decline in estrogen happening for most women from sort of mid 40s onwards, and definitely as we get into menopause. So the more both of those hormones start to decline, the more that sarcopenia can be somewhat accelerated. So that, yeah, just makes that muscle loss become easier unless we actively counteract it. And the earlier we start, the better, but it's also never too late to start. You know, some women have already started building muscle, lifting weights in their 20s. I started lifting weights properly. I've always been a gym goer in my 20s. I never actually jumped. I never realized the whole, you know, the importance of strength training until I was 29. I had started working with a personal trainer at 29. And that literally changed my future with regards to how I work out on and off. There's been certain times in my life where I haven't been able to do it for whatever reason, but I have been doing it since then. But many women are only just finding out about the importance and coming into this, like now, in their late 40s, in their early 40s, even in their early 50s. And it's never, ever too late to start building muscle. You will reap the health rewards later, but also straight away. So it's never too late. It's definitely something I want you to know. And the empowering part is that the decline is not inevitable. Regular, consistent resistance training can significantly slow, stop, and even reverse muscle loss at any age. So how we can start to build muscle, start with protein. I know I bang on about protein all the time. Lots of other practitioners like myself will bang on about protein, but it is really important that we are prioritizing protein with all of our meals. It might just sound really boring, but it will never not be important. It's essential for maintaining and building muscle. A helpful guideline for women over 40 is between 30 and 50 grams of high quality protein per meal, 3 times a day, always breakfast. Obviously, I'm saying 3 times a day, that's your breakfast, your lunch and dinner, but I have to emphasize breakfast because I'm still seeing so many people, women in their 40s, not eating enough protein at breakfast. I'm still hearing about, I have porridge for breakfast with some seeds. Isn't that enough protein? No, it's not. You know, yes, whilst porridge is lovely, it's warming and hearty in the winter, it wouldn't be something necessarily for breakfast. In fact, I love making porridge with coconut milk and some warmed berries after dinner. Sometimes it wouldn't be a huge amount that you might have in a breakfast, but it's some quality whole oats, carbohydrates and fiber that I'll have after my dinner sometimes in the winter. As a breakfast, you're not going to be able to get at least 30 grams of protein into a porridge unless you're putting a whole sort of scoop and a half of a quality protein powder in there, which probably won't taste very nice in your porridge. You know, it's just very difficult to get a good amount of protein into porridge. That's all. If you can have that 30 to 40 or 50 grams of protein on a plate in another way, and then you want some porridge as well, that's fine. But if porridge is your only breakfast with some seeds or some nut butter, that's not cutting it in terms of how much protein you need. The second thing to be doing is, of course, is strength train. But I really want to say this doesn't mean extreme workouts or long gym sessions. The research shows that you can make real progress with just 2 to 3 sessions a week, lasting 20 to 30 minutes. We want to be focusing on compound lifts because they'll recruit all the muscles at once. So squats, lunges, deadlifts, presses, rows. It can start with body weight. You know, if you haven't lifted weights before, you can do all these without weights at first. And it's always a great place to start and always very beneficial. So don't be thinking, well, unless I get into a gym and have these really heavy plates on either side of a barbell, I'm not going to be doing anything for myself. And so then I won't do anything because I'm not ready to go into a gym yet. I don't have time or whatever it might be. We must consider differently. Like, it's not black and white. We can start with our own body weight. We can do things at home. Once our own body weight of lunges and squats becomes too light, you'll just know, it just becomes too easy. Then you can purchase maybe some kettlebells or a dumbbell set to use at home. And then again, over time, as that all starts to become too light, then you might think, right, I do need to get into a gym because I need access to bars with different plates that I can put onto the sides to make these things heavier. But, you know, you can build up to that if you're not there yet. You see loads of fitness pros online, and they'll be saying how building muscle is, and you'll see them constantly in workout gear, uploading their workouts into their stories, and that's their life for a lot of those people. But it doesn't have to be yours. So me personally, I was going to the gym 4 times a week to do 2 upper bodies and 2 lower bodies each week for about 45, 50 minutes each workout. And over the years, various circumstances have prevented me from keeping up with that 4 times. I gradually got myself down to 3, and I would do 3 full body workouts a week. And then again, over the last couple of years, various circumstances with health, with energy levels, with stress have got in the way of me going 3 times a week. And I had to stop going to the gym for a while last year, but I've now built myself slowly back up. And I'm going 2x a week to do a 35 to 45 minute full body strength training session, go on a Monday and a Friday, or a Tuesday and a Friday. And that is working really well for me. I may eventually want to put in a 3rd session. I'm not trying to do that anytime soon. I'm just going to go with the flow, because the research is showing us that 2 to 3 sessions a week, 20 to 30 minutes, is still allowing us to build and maintain muscle. So I'm good with that, is what people call the minimal effective dose. That's what I'm working with right now. I just want the minimum effective dose. If I can get more than that eventually, great. I'll go back to my 3, maybe even 4 sessions a week. But for right now, I'm more than happy with 2. And I enjoy other forms of movement throughout the week. I love doing yoga at home, and I actually prefer it than actually going to classes, because I like to just do 20 to 30 to maybe 40 minute classes. And I use something called Movement for Modern Life. It's a yoga subscription, and there's an on-demand library of classes. So I have my own favorites, and they range from 10 minutes to 45 minute classes. And I just pick based on my energy levels and the time that I've got on any given day. So I'm really enjoying having the time to have that in my timetable as well. And then I love doing lots of lovely walking. I live by the beach. And for me personally, if I was going to go to the gym 3 to 4 times a week, I would do less long walks outside and I would do less yoga sessions in the week. I don't do loads of yoga. It's maybe 3 days a week. I'll do anything from 10 to, like I said, 45 to 60 minutes class. But I would have less time for those things if I went to the gym 4 times a week. And I think my recovery right now I wouldn't recover as well enough anyway between sessions. At the moment, I just need to go twice a week. So I'm only telling you that to show you that it's not black and white. There's nuance. We're all very different. What we need, what we can handle, what we want. And that's what I like my timetable to look like right now. So we've got to get a protein in, strength train. And then, of course, we need to be focusing on rest. And that includes sleep. So muscle is built during recovery. Yes, we do the work in the gym or at home, however we're doing it. But then to actually build that muscle, it's all about the recovery, and that includes sleep. So during our sleep, we support growth hormone release, which is a hormone that helps to build muscle. We support muscle repair and regeneration. We support a reduction in inflammation and blood sugar regulation. Chronic stress, on the other hand, will raise cortisol, and that can break down our muscle. It can block muscle protein synthesis, which is also known as MPS. It's how we make muscle. And it can increase fat storage. So this is why supportive practices weaved into your week really matter. Again, I speak to lots of friends and clients who say, I'm in the gym 4 times a week lifting weights, I'm doing HIIT classes, I'm doing spin classes, and I'm just getting more and more fat around the middle and not seeing the results I want to see, and I'm feeling awful. And that's because they're training in a way that's raising cortisol and not actually supporting their muscle building. And instead, it's actually supporting fat storage and increasing all of those, intensifying typical perimenopause symptoms. Not just perimenopause, this can happen at any time in life. You know, if we're overtraining and we've got stress going on as well, and there's just too much cortisol dysregulation, it's going to increase inflammatory symptoms like brain fog, fatigue, muscle aches and pains, and so on, and issues sleeping. So we really want to balance things out. Having these calming, supportive practices in the week really matter as well. So like I said about my routine, it's like plenty of time in nature, time outside, gentle movement, which is why I pick my different yoga classes depending on what I need that day. I never do anything particularly powerful with yoga. It's all sort of mindful movement. It'd be some simple breath work, just spending some time focusing on belly breathing for 3 to 5 minutes. Nidra lying down body scan meditations are really, 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 there's a lot of research actually into yoga nidra in how it can help to regulate the nervous system and support rest. And consistent sleep and light exposure, daylight exposure first thing in the morning, wind down routine at night, darkness at night, minimal screen time in the hour before bed, and so on. Things I've talked about extensively on the podcast already. So it's not about working against your body and saying, right, you should be doing these really, hard going workouts, and you should be like that person, and you should always be in your workout kit, and you should be getting up at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. and getting down to the gym just like she does. This person's been to the gym and showered and got their makeup on all by 7 o'clock. That's not what this is about. It's about working with your physiology. So I really hope if there's one thing that you've taken from this episode, it's that building muscle after 40 isn't about punishment, control, or aesthetics, or doing it how she does it. It's about supporting your body, supporting your health, and it's about resilience and kindness to your future self. You don't need to do everything at once. Like I said, you can start really small, but make whatever you're starting consistent and then just continue to build on that. And that will make a profound difference. Your body is always responding, like even now, to the smallest thing. So if you're not doing any kind of strength training, any kind of movement, other than sort of walking if you were to just start doing 10 bodyweight squats every day, which will take you 10 seconds, 20 seconds maybe, or every other day for a while, even just that would make a profound difference. And then obviously you don't just want to do 10 squats a day for the rest of your life. You do want to build on that, but start somewhere and see the difference. And then, you know, that was really motivating and empowering to help us to continue. So thank you so much for listening as always. And if you have any questions or topic requests, I'd love to hear from you. Drop me an email at francescaliparotti.com or DM me on Instagram. And of course, all of this is in the show notes as well. All right, I'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode, come and join me inside the Midlife Thrive membership. It's where I share my best resources, deeper education and coaching support to help you navigate perimenopause and beyond with clarity and confidence. Head to francescaliparotti.com/midlife-thrive-membership or check the link in the show notes, and I'll look forward to welcoming you into the community.